Welcome, everyone, to another episode of It's a Wrap with Rap. I'm your host, Ron Rappaport. I would like to thank all of our great listeners and viewers, supporters, and sponsors for helping to make this podcast such a success. We are being heard and viewed in all 50 states, all provinces of Canada, and over 70 countries around the world. Please visit our website, itsawrapwithrap.com, to find all the episodes, previews of future episodes, and find products from our sponsors. This podcast features people who have overcome life's challenges and adversities, people who can inspire, motivate, and educate us on an assortment of topics. My guest today is Christoph Morrell. Christoph is an award-winning journalist and author, Navy veteran, and Tourette's syndrome thriver. He is a self-taught writer and has authored the book The Second Son, Volumes 1 and 2. He is here today to discuss the challenges he has faced dealing with Tourette's and other adversities he has had to overcome. From Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada, welcome, Christoph, to the podcast.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Ron. You're very kind.
Well, it's an honor to have you. First off, this show spotlights people overcoming life's challenges, and Tourette's syndrome is very much a challenge to deal with. Can you please explain to our audience what Tourette's syndrome exactly is?
Well, I think to understand Tourette's, you have to understand what a syndrome is. So for people that don't know, it's a pattern of symptoms where the underlying cause is unknown. So Tourette's is a neurological condition. So part of my brain that regulates much of my body, my emotionally, physically and verbally, it does not function. And so, you know how you have those things, you have an intrusive thought where you think of something that you would say that would like be offensive, or, you know, sometimes I actually say that because my brain can't stop it. I don't have that roadblock. I don't have a check that says, you know, where my brain's like asking for ID. Right. A lot of that compulsion is what happens as a consequence.
Okay, what about tics and something like that? Same thing.
Yeah, right. So the way it manifests is unique in every single person with Tourette's. For me, I say any number of things, all different kinds of words. But I Shakespeare. My most reliable tic, though, verbally, is to say Shakespeare. which is preferable to some that I've had in the past. Shakespeare. The kind of Tourette's that I have, though, is a rare manifestation, exceedingly rare, actually, because I faced an extraordinary amount of physical abuse growing up, and so I actually hurt myself a lot. I gouged my own eyes. I punched myself in the face. I've given myself black eyes and bloody lips. Any number of things. I have to be very careful around myself.
Right. Okay. Is this, some people are going to say, well, this sounds a little bit like autism. Is there any connection with that?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think it's relevant. It's always relevant to consider that because I have every comorbid condition that one would find. Shakespeare with autism. I'm Tourette's. I have ADHD, depression, anxiety. I have OCD. So I'm very obsessive. But that does, in a strange way, that's benefited me immensely. So I was able to write a book like this.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to talk about that.
Because
yeah.
I work relentlessly. In fact, my friends. And the people that support me and my sponsors that have helped me, they, you know, I'm the hardest working person they know for that reason. So, no, Shakespeare.
So, Chris, if medication is recommended, what are the options?
There actually is no medication that treats Tourette's on label. So there's nothing out there that the FDA and that's approved to treat Tourette's. It's there. So there's a surgery that where they drill a hole in your skull and they insert like a rod with the hollow rod all the way down to the center middle of your brain, and they put an electrical lead in there into your brain, and then that lead is connected to a battery that they surgically implant underneath your collarbone, under your skin. And and that is called deep brain stimulation, and that's meant to be that's really the only that's a last resort kind of measure. And given my profession, writing,
Right.
it's I it, I honestly don't care who it is. Even the greatest brain surgeon in the world, I would not subject myself to that. I just won't.
I would imagine that would only be used in extreme cases.
Shakespeare. And I honestly would consider my case re really extreme, actually. My hand is deformed, my right hand, because I've hit it so many times involuntarily on stuff. I mean, you would be able to see, like, my middle finger is chronically swollen.
Yeah.
And I gouge my eyes, and I've actually caused them to bleed.
Wow.
And so Shakespeare, like, in especially in the corners, like in the near the conjunctiva.
Yeah.
So it's really quite it's quite terrifying, actually, to think, I might blind myself one day, actually, because enough chronic, truly, you hit yourself enough, whatever you're hitting is going to start to it's going to demonstrate that you are hurting it at some point.
You're right. It's
It's
gonna
gonna
diminish. Yeah. And that's still going on right now, even as we
Shakespeare,
speak.
yeah, it is. Yeah, it is. Every single, probably every 5 minutes of the day, I have to stop myself, like, because I do this, and like and I'll I just sometimes it surprises me, and other times I'm able to catch it. But the way that I describe it, and I think that it's helpful to describe it in this sense, the amount of time that I have to catch it. If you've ever been in a kitchen and you had stuff on the counter and you saw in the corner of your eye that it was going to roll, someone was going to roll off the counter, and you catch it. That's about how it feels. That's very much what it feels like. And I have to do that all day, every day.
Wow, and that takes a lot of
Shakespeare.
your energy, I would
It
imagine.
does. Yes,
Yeah.
it does. Shakespeare.
What type of behavior therapy can help in this case?
Shakespeare.
Is there any behavior therapy that they can utilize?
There is a comprehensive behavioral intervention of tics, CBIT, which is or co competing behavior intervention of tics. So you do. So if I have a tic where I gouge my eyes, I'm supposed to perform another action, and a competing action, and I can snap my fingers, or I can do something, like, it doesn't matter. That can help sort of teach your body. It sort of undoes that sort of neural pathways that are really deeply in a ditch in your head, basically, a very reliable groove. And so there's dialectical behavioral therapy, DBT. There's comprehensive behavioral therapy, or CB. I don't remember all of them. There's so many. CBT, DBT.
There's a lot of them.
They
Okay.
sound like drugs, honestly. After a certain point, you're just like,
Right. Now, my experience with Tourette's is some people kind of yell out or whatever. Is that your case, or you
Shakespeare.
don't
I
have that?
actually had to tell, like, I'm in a hotel right now. I was staying, like, I have a home, obviously, outside of this place. But they're doing construction, and like every day and all day long. And so someone that is sponsors my work, kind of a Gertrude Stein, if you're familiar with her role in for American or just artists in general in Paris in the 1920s.
Right.
So I she the person helped me. They paid for me to stay at a hotel for a month, so Shakespeare, so that I could do my work in peace. But I had to tell the front desk, I said I have Tourette's. And then I had to explain it to them, because virtually, it's invariably, no one knows really what it entails. And especially, like I said earlier, it's unique in each person. And so I had to tell them, like, I scream like I'm being tortured sometimes. It's very intermittent. I might do it once every 10 minutes, and it's really quite loud. In fact, I have to like be careful when I have a cat, Sparkles, which she has quite a affectionate following on social media. People love
Yeah.
her.
Oh,
She's
wow.
elderly. She's like almost 20 years old. But I when I'm near her face, I have to worry about yelling in her ear, because it can strike at any moment. So.
Oh, yeah. Chris, what are the biggest challenges living with Tourette's?
The injuries. Yeah, it's definitely the injuries. It can be really frustrating. I slap myself in the face a lot. A lot. And if I have anxiety, if I'm anxious at all, it's profoundly worse. And I've done a, I've gotten to the point where I was in tears because I just kept hitting myself in the face and hitting my, like, I mean, imagine hitting yourself in the nose over and over again. You can't stop, and you're hitting yourself really hard.
Yeah.
Shakespeare. I mean, it's awful. It's awful. And I think honestly, that's really it. That's probably the most
I was
damaging.
going to ask you, you're saying that, you're hitting yourself and a lot of times very hard. Have you had to go at all to the hospital?
Oh my God, yeah. I have to go to the hospital once every few months. Sometimes even more often, because I'll hit my hands especially hard. I remember actually once, before I was divorced with my ex-wife. I call her my old friend. So my old friend and I, we were at the hospital. I had a black eye because my Tourette's, I had a tics that gave, I hit myself in the eye a bunch of times, and I had a black eye. And I went to the hospital in the ER, and they were asking her if she felt safe. They didn't ask me. They never asked me. They asked her if she felt safe, and which is, I thought, was baffling, because she was actually taller than me. I'm 5'10". She's like 6'1". It was
Yeah.
really strange. Anyway, so that was really injurious, I think, to my impression of people and the health and healthcare in general. It's not fun. It's not fun to deal with that. But I've had to go to get X-rays all the time on my right hand, which I've learned. There's something called Boxer fractures, which I don't even think I have to expand on. Like because a boxer hits things all the time, they
Yeah.
create these micro fractures in their hands,
Right.
and it leads to chronic, like it leads to swelling and things like that. But it also has the strange, I think it has a strange benefit where it, and you should probably know this, if you break a bone, it grows back, and it's often stronger than it was before, because of that. So like I actually haven't broken my hand, but it hurts a lot. It hurts
Oh,
all the
yeah.
time. I've lost function of my thumb. I can't even bend it. When I bend it hurts a lot. I can't bend it. And so it's, it's,
Have you ever, I'm sure you have. I mean, do you have to put padding on your furniture or anything
Oh
like that?
yeah, Shakespeare, absolutely. Yep. I have a pool noodle that I slip over the front of my desk because I hit my hand on the desk a lot. And I wear sometimes I have to wear a helmet. Sometimes I have to wear gloves that have padding. Like a the thing is that there all of these measures are improvised measures. Everything that I've had to buy these and find a use. I find a useful intervention to keep from injuring myself, like wearing mountain biking gloves, for example.
Yeah.
And not all gloves are created equal, So it's quite a it's really difficult to find equipment that can help me protect myself because of how rare it is to have the kind of Tourette's I have, Shakespeare.
Did the and I don't want to pry, so if you don't feel uncomfortable,
No, it's okay.
but did the Tourette's lead to problems with the marriage?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it did. Yeah.
Yeah,
That's,
I
yeah.
can imagine. Now, when you got married, you had this going on. I mean, she knew that this was an issue. correct?
No, that's the thing. Shakespeare. It didn't really. I didn't. I had an. Ep I had about four episodes, I think, where I had 4 days, 4 separate days over 6 years. So 4 days in a 6 year period where I had tics. So I didn't know that I had Tourette's until I was diagnosed when I was 27.
Wow.
No. So she was, she was with me for more than a year, 2 years before that happened.
Okay. Now, well, I guess we kind of covered the topic about strategies for managing your tics. So obviously, you do have strategies with the mittens and that type of thing to kind of blunt the
Yeah.
force.
Do you see my finger? You can see it. It's like, all the way like that. This finger is normal. See how flat that is? And then that one.
Yeah.
It's yeah.
Have you do you pass out after any of these episodes?
No.
Okay, so you remain conscious.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, it's
Okay.
not like a seizure. It is similar to a seizure though. It's
Okay.
very similar in many senses, yeah.
What do you wish people knew about Tourette's?
How hard it is, I think, more than anything, because of I Shakespeare. I used to try to work a normal job, and Shakespeare. It's really difficult, impossible to be around people. In fact, like given my condition and the criteria in which I was living in it, Shakespeare. I talked to a work counselor for British Columbia. Here in Canada, and they said they couldn't find me work because of all of these parameters of my condition.
Right.
And so they told me to start. They said, "Well, you used to write, and you love that. So just why not do that?" And so 10 minutes after hanging up with that woman who the counselor, I started writing the book.
Awesome. All right. She gave you a little inspiration there.
Yeah.
What has been your response to any negative comments directed at you?
The thing is, so few people offer that and submit or assert anything that is hurtful. It's often inadvertent. The only thing that the thing is that if it is hurtful, it's that they don't understand that my emotions can't be regulated either. Like,
Let me break away for a very important message that may pertain to many listening to this podcast. Did you know that you can sell your life insurance for immediate cash? 85% of people have no idea this is even possible. Also, did you know that 92% of life insurance policies never pay a death claim? A life insurance policy is considered an asset that you own, meaning you, the policy owner, can sell it for a lump sum cash payment known as a viatical settlement, which is tax-free and non-regulated, meaning you decide how the money is spent. A viatical settlement pertains to people living with a serious or chronic illness, such as cancer, heart disease, Alzheimer's, or AIDS, with no age restriction. For others who do not qualify for a viatical settlement, a life settlement may be an option if you qualify to relieve the burden of having a policy you may no longer need or serves the original purpose it was purchased for. Studies show that 42% of new cancer patients deplete their life savings during the first 2 years of treatment. Cancer patients are twice as likely to declare bankruptcy as those without the disease. Life Insurance Buyers Incorporated, based in Kansas City, Missouri, owned and operated by husband and wife team Greg and Lisa Albers, are licensed viatical and life settlement brokers that act as a fiduciary to protect the best interests of you, the policy owner, in the life settlement process by creating a competitive auction with licensed buyers to deliver the best possible value to you, the seller of your policy. Greg has been in the life insurance industry for over 50 years and has done over 3,000 of these transactions over the years. Now, when you contact life insurance buyers, you will work with Greg or Lisa, never a third party. Life insurance buyers are licensed in all states that require a settlement license, and more importantly, they only work with providers and buyers who are licensed as well, which means life insurance buyers adheres to all of the state regulations set forth by the insurance industry in every state. Now, in determining whether a settlement is a good option for you, it is important to understand the difference between a settlement broker versus a settlement provider. A broker represents you, the policyholder, and their fiduciary responsibility is to you to present your policy to all licensed buyers and obtain the highest offer possible for you. A settlement provider represents the buyer of the policy, and their goal is to purchase the policy for a minimal price, which does not benefit you, the seller of your policy. Life insurance buyers can broker virtually any type of life insurance policy, including group, term, if convertible, whole, and universal life. Not every policy can be sold. The type and amount of the policy, your age, your health, among other factors that life settlement companies consider. Life insurance buyers does not charge for their services to you. Their fee is paid by the buyer upon close of the transaction. No application fee, invasive interviews, or physical examinations are required, only that you complete a confidential information inquiry. For more detailed information, please contact Greg or Lisa at 1-800-936-5508. All contact information will be listed in the podcast notes.
Like all of these, the different parts of my brain, that there is no traffic cop in the middle. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And so like whenever I experience, you know, grief much more intensely sometimes. And like some things will make me cry and some things will make me really mad, you know? And it's really quite injurious often to relationships because they don't understand. I do my best to explain that and manage that. And there's a lot of ways that you can diminish or depreciate these episodes. And often the only real solution is to, you have to go away for a while, you know, for a few minutes. Shakespeare, when I start to feel emotional, it's not something I can be like, you know, I'm just gonna chill. I can't just tell myself, you can relax, it's okay, you know, you're gonna, it doesn't work like that. It does not work like that. Shakespeare.
Gotcha.
So I have to leave, you know.
Yeah. Are there any online groups for people with Tourette's? And also, is this more prevalent for males, or is it about equal with females?
You know, I honestly don't know. And I'm apprehensive about speculating because I know that a lot of women or people that present as women have like been neglected in a lot of these conditions. In fact, for a long time, they didn't even believe that women could get ADHD, which is bewildering to me. But and autism and a number of other conditions in most drug trials they don't get the prescription drugs to try them because of there's so many other like variables to consider, and they think so anyway. I don't know if it is. Yeah, Shakespeare.
Any online groups?
The online groups. You know, that's funny because I tried to reach out to an online group like over the last several years. There's a Tourette's an organization called Tourette's Canada, and I reached out to them like 3 or 4 years ago, and they never answered me. And then I wrote them again a couple years later, and someone said, "Oh, well, we have an online support group, but we're going to need to interview you first to make sure that you're a good fit for the group." And then no one called me back. Like no, they didn't, even though I wrote them again like a month later. Like, you're supposed to call me back later that week. Now it's a month and no one's called me. And then like a week ago, actually, like I tried to contact them again, and it was not a fun exchange because they were very defensive. Like whoever was running the Facebook account got quite upset with me because I was like, excuse me, what's going on with this place? And you know, there's a lot of things that for whenever someone, if you have a disability like I do, and you want to discuss it with someone who doesn't have it, and they say, "Oh, I have a friend or I have a family member that has it, so I know what you're going through." Do not say that. Do not say that you understand what they're going through. That is the wrong thing to say. And that's what they said. They said, "Oh, my son has Tourette's. I know what you're dealing with, and I know everything about what he dealt with." So, and I was like, "No, you don't. You don't understand. You don't understand at all." No.
Absolutely.
No.
Absolutely. I know I have a rare disease, I guess you call it, male breast cancer. I've had it twice. We do have a support group. I run it. And
Oh, wow.
there's maybe 2,500 cases a year in the United States, which is nothing really. But we have people from Canada and Europe and the United States. There's just not a whole lot, but
Yeah, I would imagine. That sounds, yeah, that's I think that's in the ballpark of what I'm dealing with, honestly.
yeah. And what I would
Yeah.
say, just what came to mind is, you know what, maybe what you ought to do, start your own
Start my own
Facebook
group.
group.
That's what I told them. I said, like, I'm just gonna start my own group because clearly I was like, I've done 40 interviews in the last couple of months. And clearly, I am a much more emotionally invested in this situation because I'm experiencing it. It's funny because there's actually support groups for parents because most of the time, it's only 10%, I think, 10%, they say 10% of people who have Tourette's when they're children, bring it into adulthood. And so it becomes exceedingly rare. And 10% of those people have it as severely as I do. And maybe even less actually, but I know that it's at least 10% to actually cause injury to yourself and things like that. And so I tell I told them that I was like, I'm gonna have to do this myself because I mean I've done more for Tourette's than this entire organization has since I mean for years,
Absolutely. And when I started advocating for the male breast cancer happens.org, that's when I started my own Facebook group. And it's not just for male breast cancer, but it's for, all kinds of people with all kinds of issues. And I am going to invite you to be a member of our group.
That would be
So
amazing.
yeah, I'm gonna send you an invite. And anytime you want to promote awareness of Tourette's, I'll definitely put it on my group. You know,
That's amazing.
I'll put it out, and it spreads. It spreads all over the place.
That's
So,
amazing, Ron. Thank
yeah.
you.
So
Wow.
I'll talk to you offline about that. Now, I know the syndrome started earlier when you were around 19, I believe. Is that about right? And then you were diagnosed with it at age 26, but you were living in the state of Texas, correct?
That's right. No.
But now you're in Canada. So how did you get from, and you were a U.S. Navy veteran as well, right?
That's right, yeah.
Yeah. So how did you get from Texas to Vancouver?
My old friend, we were married, and she's
Oh,
Canadian and
okay.
American,
Yeah.
and Shakespeare. I was working as a reporter at a newspaper, and where I'd won some awards for journalism and photography, and I just felt like it wasn't given my the my given my condition and how it manifests. I yell a lot. I startle people, and Texas is not shy about people having guns. And given it's a very apprehensive place to live if you have that kind of situation going on. So I wanted to move to a place where I knew reliably there weren't going to be people that, were trying to save the day.
Yeah.
Then getting pulled over by, I mean, I was a 911 dispatcher for a time. And so I have some experience working with police, and my brother was a cop, and so I know getting pulled over was could be very dangerous for me. So that people have been killed for less, truly.
Yeah. So that was one. So you said, hey, let's go to
Yeah, we
Canada.
gotta get out of here.
I mean, I don't think they have, I don't know if you can own a gun up there. Can you own a gun?
You can. Oh yeah, you can. You can. You just have to keep it in a safe, and you're not allowed to like conceal carry or open carry.
Yeah.
That's my understanding anyway. And I think my understanding also is that their police force here in Canada is federally regulated, and so it's similar to the FBI. But if you imagine one step down, of course, you have the municipal police and sheriffs and things like that. Well, here there it's they have. The federal government actually regulates the Royal Canadian Mounted Police,
Right.
the Mounties. Those
Right.
guys are the cops. They're the
Yeah.
cops here, and they're all under one umbrella of authority, not like where in the US where everything's fragmented.
Right. Now you write that you were viciously abused as a child by your parents. Can you tell us about those years growing up and what your family dynamics were?
Yeah, I was the third kid born. I had two older sisters, and then my father was an alcoholic, and he drank a lot, and he was very angry. Even looking at him the wrong way meant like I could get beaten for that. Like, and he was like it, honestly, there's so many like very grim stories that. Would just make everyone really sad. And I often like it's there. It's the kind of thing that you would see like some of the things you would see in a horror movie. Like I have scars from them. And my father used to hurt himself hurting me. Like, does that make sense? He would like hit me. He would be swinging so hard that he would, his shoulder would, he'd throw out a shoulder. You know what I'm saying? Like that.
Yeah.
And so he would scream himself hoarse. And even to this day, he's still there. And so the last time I spoke to him, actually, he called me a stupid POS, the
Okay,
whole thing,
got you. Got you. Yeah.
which is quite amusing now, because given I've done this and he didn't do anything like that.
Right,
But
right. How long ago was it that you had your conversation with him?
that was probably 5 years ago.
You haven't spoken since. Yeah. Okay. Understandable. Did the Tourette's affect your Navy career?
It did actually, because that was Shakespeare. That's when it first manifested, and it was an extraordinary amount of pressure for me because I wanted to do my job right.
Yeah.
And so I didn't want to be unreliable. I didn't want to sleep in, or it just I needed to be there when they needed me to be there. And given the nature of my profession, also I was a corpsman, so I was a medic. It was also very important for me to know what I was doing and to be competent. And so whenever I just had a great deal of anxiety. I wasn't able to sleep because I was afraid of oversleeping. Because I had to be at work. I had to be up at 4:45 in the morning or something to get there by 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
That's 6 a.m. And so eventually. I was working at the hospital in med surg, which is where there's a lot of patients for any number of issues that aren't like local to a specific part of the body often, or like they're recovering post-surgery, post-op. I was working in that place, and I had something that resembled a seizure, and they didn't know what it was, but I wasn't deployable anymore, and they weren't I they I was going to be basically mopping floors for the next 4 years if I had stayed.
Yeah.
So I got out. Shakespeare.
So, like a medical discharge. Yeah. So, Chris, what inspired you to be a writer?
Oh man. I think for people that are familiar, of course, they've probably heard the name John Steinbeck. John Steinbeck wrote Of Mice and Men, Grapes of Wrath, East of Eden. For any of you guys don't know, I'm sure you know Of Mice and
Sure.
Men for certain. He said his whole mission as a writer is to help people understand one another. That perfectly encapsulates why I do it. But it's also because I believe that magic, that language is the only magic we've ever created. Is truly like the notion that we want to understand others and that we want to be understood, I think is the most beautiful thing about us. It's our the most ennobling thing we've done. It's our greatest virtue.
So
And
like,
I love words. I love them. I see them when I look at a word. It's Hemingway actually wrote that when he sees a word, it's like he's seeing it every time for the first time. And I know what that means, because every time that you see a word, when you see it again in the context of another situation, you rediscover like how it applies in the real world and against reality, and how we mean it to and how it's and how it's received. And so I when I see a word, I see 50 different uses for 50 different ways that we perceive it. And it's lovely. I love it. I love it.
that's great. I love your passion. Now, like Dickens and Hemingway, you are a self-taught writer.
That's right.
What was that process like for you, and how did you accomplish that?
Well, I should I yeah, just like Dickens and Hemingway, similar, yes. I taught myself, and I learned actually like a couple of weeks ago that my work is taught, like is recommended reading in intro to Victorian literature classes studying Dickens, actually. So I'm a self-published writer, and my work is like, professors literally talk about my work. So it's extraordinary.
Yeah.
That's less than a year after publication, my first book to be received. It's hard to describe the scale of that achievement to people that don't really that don't keep up with that sort of thing, but that's a big deal. That's
Oh,
a big
yeah.
deal. Yeah, and so Shakespeare. For me, I to learn to write, it really began with experimenting with sounds. Because believe it or not, like within your brain, like it doesn't matter that you're reading it silently, because there is a music to it. There's a rhythm, and your brain adopts that, and it's so important for it to be for it to be done well. The amount of syllables is relevant. The every part of the word is important, and every other word it must empower. It must and it's. It lends itself to the sentence. Each word does, and so for me, that's it started when I was in the Navy, and I just was writing.
Let's break away for a moment to let me tell you about a book our podcast supporter, Rissa August, has written titled The Road Unpaved, Border to Border with a Brain Tumor and a Bite, which gives the reader an honest, intimate look at a Herculean physical effort while revealing a very personal struggle with a brutal disease. Read and write along with Rissa as she relates her incredible experiences with acromegaly, a rare condition where the body produces too much growth hormone, causing body tissues and bones to grow more quickly, leading to a wide range of devastating and damaging symptoms. Follow her successful, inspiring challenge to cycle the Pacific Coast Highway from north to south, which is 1,845 miles long from Canada to Mexico. The old Rissa could have done the ride in her sleep, but for the new Rissa, trapped in a body that no longer feels like her own, and stuck in the company of her brain tumor named Bubba, the ride becomes a challenge unlike she has ever had to face. The book is a testament to the power of the human spirit. Rissa shares her honest account of being diagnosed with a brain tumor and how she found meaning, purpose, and joy in uncertainty. Filled with passion and exuding deep insight, Rissa takes the reader on an adventure of the soul. You will be captivated as Rissa goes against all odds and digs deep within herself. The reader also pedals along on a profound journey of adversity. Rissa masterfully weaves together both humor and brutal honesty to provide a window into the patient experiencing of one suffering from a significant medical condition. It is a heart-wrenching yet refreshing account of finding the courage to break down barriers and to embrace and live one's best life. As Rissa pedals through rain, pain, and the ghosts of her memories, she wonders if the woman she once was will ever return or whether the new woman rising up in her place just might be the person she was meant to be all along. Every once in a while, a person and a book comes across your path that makes you stop and realize just how precious life is, and that we should seize every single opportunity and make the most of every moment we have been given. Rissa is one such person, and her incredible, uplifting, and inspiring story will leave a lasting imprint on your heart and mind. In this wonderful book, I have no doubt that you will vow every day to be more like Rissa in your outlook and actions. The book is available in paperback, audio, Audible, and Kindle format from Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Rakuten, Bookshop, and Goodreads. Rissa's website, www.rissaaugust.com, lists all your purchasing options and dates of book signings. The book information will be listed in the podcast notes.
Sort of a stream of consciousness sort of thing. Doesn't make any sense really. But then I've always had a propensity for it though, because even when I was 13, we had to write letters to soldiers in Iraq and Afghanistan. And the letter that I wrote, I wrote it because it was really important to me to do it right because of the nature of the letter. I remember feeling a kind of music awaken in me. It was the most profound experience I think I've ever had. I learned later that day that my teacher read it to every class.
Wow.
And that she wanted to publish it in the newspaper. It was innate. I didn't try to learn before that ever. It just made sense to me.
Yeah, it's not something you can learn. You were just you have that talent.
It reminds me of something Christopher Hitchens said. Yeah, he said he's a polemicist. For people that don't know, he's a journalist, and he's Jewish, and he's from I don't know his other ethnicity, but I know that he was Jewish and from the UK, from England, and he said that if you can write, you don't need to go to school to learn how to write. And if you can't write, you still shouldn't go to school to learn how to write. And so I hold that same view. I think that I do like personalized tutoring. So like I work with, I do free like tutoring with people. And some of my students actually have English degrees, like masters in English. They teach English, you know, and so it's extraordinary, it's really you have to work with each person individually and understand where their their strategies are falling apart, teaching yourself to write is about being able to discern what you're doing right and wrong, and you do that through the masters too, of course. Reading, if you find someone find a writer that's worthwhile and that really inspires you and really like it's their work synergizes with your brain, like it's playing to the same tune, you'll know it when you see it. That's how it works.
So here you are with no college degree, and you had a journalist career, and you won awards. Tell us about that time in your life.
It's a funny story. My editor, she says, she pulls me into the office and she says, "I got a guy, his name is Ray Yannick, here in El Campo, and I want you to write a feature about him." I didn't know what a feature was, but I wasn't going to tell her that.
Right.
I went back to my desk and I looked up, how to write a feature. And I looked at a WikiHow article, swear to God. And I realized, I was like, no, this isn't going to work. I found a writer. I found a writer who wrote a feature that I admired his work, their work. And I sort of studied their format. And then I just recreated that in my own way. And I won an award for feature writing for that reason from the South Texas Press Association. And then for photography, it was that same situation. I've never been a photographer in my entire life. In fact, it's actually it's a hang up. I take so few photos in relations. I didn't have very many when my old friend and I were separated. It was not much to move around. And I won an award for taking a photograph of a woman who was being rescued during Hurricane Harvey.
Wow. That's a great story. Now you worked with a film director as a script doctor. Tell us about that.
Oh man. The most bizarre circumstances. So I had a really dear when I was working at this video security company that was part of Acadian Ambulance, which is a the largest private ambulance company, I think, in the US. I think that's my understanding. And they're based out of Louisiana. Acadian is a French it comes from like Acadiana in Canada, the Quebec, or I don't know. Anyway, so I had a friend that was wor that worked in ambulance dispatch, and he introduced me to a director, who for, somehow they're friends. I don't know how that, but this guy, they did a he. At one point, I remember somebody a few times people came up to us, and while I was walking with him on a university campus, he was accepting an alumni award. That director. And they were like, oh my God, you know, I can I please have your autograph? Please, can you please tell that, because he did a he has a known he has his improv show on television in India. And so and then I saw him doing a Facebook live event, and he had like 300,000 people watching. I was like, what the hell is going on? So anyway, he tells I didn't know any of this though before I had this my first discussion with him about a movie that he wanted to do. So he tells me about this movie he wants to do, and off the like I just off the cuff I'm telling him, no, that this can be done, you should do this instead, like have the story, this is what you should do in the story instead. And he said, you know what, I'm going to send you the script and you do what you think, make whatever changes you think, and then you get back to me. And I rewrote the entire script overnight. I had food poisoning by and while I was doing it. And I rewrote the entire script within 6 hours. And then the next morning, I showed up without any sleep. I showed up to the producers' meeting and we did the first read through. And some of the things were taken out and some of it, but we had this really lovely home. It was two or three stories, and it had a beautiful courtyard with a big fountain. I got to work with it around like 50, it was so incredible to see. Like I wrote it, I remember the first scene that was filmed that I had written. And it's watching so many people collaborate to make the scene that I wrote a reality, at least in the lens of a camera, was it was the most validating feeling back then that I had experienced as a writer. And you know, and I remember some of the scenes that I wrote. They're quite sad, and they said that they had a hard time filming them because everyone on the crew like, was crying when we were trying to film the scene, and so it was really lovely, honestly. But ultimately, it didn't work out really great for I, it was a it ended up I just I felt like I could do better, you know. So I wanted to do not like I could do better than the movie. I would say I could do better as a writer. I wanted to do something. I wanted to try again, and there was a lot of anyway, so yeah, it was an incredible experience though, getting to travel and to do that.
So you write where there was a period of 5 years when you were battling worsening Tourette's syndrome and you didn't write at all.
That's right.
What was that time period like for you?
Oh man, a blur. I don't, you know, it's it was just it was darkness. I didn't yeah, it was like being in a coma.
That's a long time, yeah.
I stopped I and the th it really was though, I was so I was rudderless. I didn't know what I was going to do because I didn't really I mean I had many experiences. Like when I was 22 years old, I should have known that I was a writer. And I was going to do that for the rest of my life because I was 22 and I wrote a short story that I submitted to the New Yorker, and the editor I got an email back, a rejection letter from the New Yorker that they said that my narrator's voice was quite compelling, which I don't like. I don't need to tell you that's the most prestigious literary magazine in the world. So and the percentage of people that they even bother to write some kind of compliment to in a rejection letter is very, 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 very small. Less than it's in the single digits percentage wise, the
Yeah.
amount of submissions that they bother to do that. I think it's 3%. And so it was extraordinary. I actually got it on my birthday, on my 23rd birthday. I received my rejection letter on my 23rd birthday. It was incredible. Yeah, so I didn't write for 5 years, and it was really hard on me. I did a lot of nothing, just trying to figure out. I tried to go to school. I went to Oregon State University for one semester, and I got all A's. I got straight A's. I think I got a 1B, but it was in a class that I didn't care about, so it wasn't really relevant to my degree. And
Yeah.
because I wanted to study political science, I'm fascinated by geopolitics, because that's really, chaos. I wrote in my book that chaos and its invention and your ability to invent it is the force most supreme in the world. It truly is. And so there's so many experiences and things that I saw happening in reality, and learning, being able to like predict what was going to happen between different states, in different countries was very, I was just very eager to do it.
So you're writing epic fantasy fiction, but of course you started out in journalism. You write the book, The Second Son. What is the premise of the book, and what would you like the readers to take away from reading it?
Well, I think that every generation like knows that they need to do better in every metric, than their parents, right?
Right.
So in our circumstance, especially like for me, I'm 34 years old. When baby boomers were 34, were my age, they had 20% of the national wealth. Millennials at the exact same age have 2% right now. And so that's an extraordinary wealth disparity. And so we're not living in, we don't live in the same reality as they do. So it's actually about, but it's really about like older generations in their retirement age and like living in a sort of financial paradise. And because there is a literal paradise in the book. And when your mortal form expires, you bury yourself with the seed of whatever it is you want to become, and you become that tree or that plant. And outside of that paradise is like a Game of Thrones type situation. It's violent. There's empires, and there's civil war, and there's slavery, and there's pirates. There's so many elements. But I Game of Thrones, though, I try. There isn't another series that I can use to communicate like the premise, because I don't use as much violence. There's a lot of violence in Game of Thrones, and like sexual violence, and I didn't want to do that. I wanted more like the spirit of Tolkien, so everyone feels like they're part of the adventure, and they can achieve something no matter how big or small they are. And so I really wanted this to be for everyone, and because Shakespeare, and because I'm disabled myself, there's a lot of representation in that sense. There's people that are hard of hearing, and there's people that are blind. There's people that are, I mean, there's so many like different conditions that I allude to, because it was important to me that people knew that I knew that they existed, and they were member to that adventure. In a way that really that positively outlined their lives and their struggles. And so there's it's all there. When I've actually asked my readers, what is my book about? Because it was hard for me to describe, and they said it's everything. It's about everything. There's every kind of situation in it. When you write an epic fantasy, if you've read Lord of the Rings, for example, you know that he does that thing where he makes up a history that reinforces and expands and to help you understand the current situation. I did the same, but there's no like elves or anything like that. There's no it's actually really very much grounded in reality. And in fact, you can't even be certain that there's actual magic in the book. There's You know what I mean? Because it's almost like just things that exist in nature. And I
Okay.
actually, yeah, so.
Now, you and the book both go viral on TikTok. Tell us about that because I understand you went viral and you got 1 million views.
Yeah. I am. So basically, I got my first review from a woman named Sandra, who's very lovely, and who's become very dear to me. She also lives in the Vancouver area. And that's actually why I moved to the Vancouver area, partly because I knew that I she's almost like a young aunt. That's how she likes me to describe her.
Okay.
She's a young aunt. And so so she told me that she loved the book so much, and it was her favorite book, and there was just a number of things really that were very flattering and very lovely. Well, I made a video about that. About to get receiving that review, and then 2 days, and then the next day, I saw that two people had bought my book. As a consequence, and then I made a video about that. Now, the next morning, following that day, I woke up and I saw my book was like number 247, number 247 on the Epic Fantasy category on Amazon.com, which was is extraordinary. And so that whatever I had said really resonated with a lot of people. That video that I made as a consequence of seeing my number being number 247, that video went viral. I have about almost 400,000 views.
Wow.
Shakespeare. And so I ended up which was interesting also because my book happened to be free for those like 5 day for a 5 day period. And so that encouraged a lot of people to get the physical also. So I ended up selling a ton of books, over 1,000 actually. And so then I think I'm at 1,300 now, because you don't it's difficult to like manifest that magic. I've actually gone viral twice, but the second time was had to do with the fact that I saw someone reading my book, and you could see the page numbers going up. And I made a video about that, and that's like 50,000 views,
That's unbelievable. Yeah.
And so I love it. And so I have about 6,000 followers now, and I get messages every day from people that say they're buying my book or they've read it, and they say that I actually got a message last night from a young I think it's a young woman. She wrote me that she's never read a fantasy book like this, and that's because I write prose like literature. I mean to write literature, like Dickens. Like if Dickens tried to write an epic fantasy, like imagine what that would look like. And that's what I did.
Right.
And yeah. So.
Well, you can tell, and we can all tell from just listening to you that whatever you do, you're going to do it the proper way. You're gonna do it right. What's in the future for you? What do you want to keep doing? Or what do you want to expand into?
I would like similarly to I would like to do like a movie or not a movie but like a television show version of it, because that's ultimately like what I really love movies and TV shows a lot. I rarely read, which is it's probably going to surprise a lot of people. I think I've read around 100 books in my life.
And here
And
you are, this great
yeah,
writer.
right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so for me, but I've seen so many television shows, and I mean, I pay attention, I pay very close attention to the dialogue. But I wanted to. I have volume three that I'm working on right now. I've already written the first draft. It's 120,000 words. The Hobbit, for people that don't know, is 98,000 words. So that
Wow.
gives you some kind of understanding. This book is 225,000. So I'm doing that. I'm probably gonna be it's probably gonna be a five the second son's gonna be a five volume series, I think. And then after that, I'm gonna do a science fiction a sci-fi series. It's gonna be pretty cool, I think. Yeah. And
You're going to be a busy man.
oh I'm bit that all I do is work. All I do is work. I probably sleep 4 or 5 hours a night, and the rest of the time I'm working or trying to inform my work in some way.
That's great. So, Chris, if If people want to contact you, purchase your book, how do they do that?
I actually have a website now. I've met some very lovely people who wanted to help me financially with so they pair they I have a website that they paid for, and they set it up. They had it all set up for me. I didn't do anything. And they just asked me, like, does this look good? And I was yes, it so christophmorrow.com exists now. And so it didn't when I wrote you when we first had a correspondence. And so, because that's only like it's only like a week old. It's less than a week old.
Oh, right. Okay. Now, do they have to put a www in there or just Christoph?
No, not that I know of. I just type in christophmorrow.com on
Okay.
in your browser.
Okay.
And it has links to my TikTok, Amazon. I think it has links to like different interviews I've done.
Okay.
And just I mean all my social medias, like Facebook and Instagram and everything.
Great. Okay. I'll put that in the podcast notes. Now you have endured and overcome several challenges in life. What words do you have for those out there listening to your story that are now struggling? What words of advice do you have for them?
I think that every person should confide in friendship and should seek that most of all, because in that you would discover your purpose. Because it's out of love for people and out of a love to serve others in a way that that's really going to generate meaning for you, like and to succeed. And passion, because passion is a very attractive quality, and people see it and they're willing to engage with you. Anybody can be like do these different jobs and stuff, but if you truly love what you do, you're going to stand out. And friendship's the way to do that.
Good advice. Good advice. I want to thank you, Christoph, for being here and sharing your story with us. I know you are giving people hope and encouragement out there and advocating for awareness to Tourette's. I want to wish you all the best with your work going forward. And thank you once again for being on the podcast.
Thank you, Ron. It was really kind of you to have me.
All right. For people out there who have comments and suggestions for the podcast, you can email me at itsawrapwithrap@gmail.com. Our Facebook group, we have a couple thousand in there now. It's a Wrap with Rap. Instagram, it's a Wrap with Rap podcast. We're on Twitter or X as it's known now at Rapper, WRAPPER 130. Our website is itsawrapwithrap.com. And all the episodes are on YouTube. It's a Wrap with Rap, the podcast. Uncut. I want to thank everyone for listening. Please stay safe out there. And for now, it's a wrap. This podcast is being brought to you in part by the veteran-founded Hero Soap Company, located in Phoenix, Arizona. In today's environment, we must be aware of the products we apply to our skin. As a two-time cancer survivor, I cannot afford to take chances, and I use these products myself. The soaps will leave you feeling clean and refreshed. All the products made by the Hero Soap Company are made in the United States with the highest quality ingredients sourced from companies in the United States whenever possible. The products are made in small batches to ensure high quality and contain premium essential oils and fragrance. All Hero soaps are created without synthetic colorants, parabens, and sulfates that are irritating to the eyes, skin, mouth, and lungs, and are cruelty-free, meaning these products are not tested on animals. Each 5-ounce bar of soap is handmade in Phoenix, Arizona, and the body wash is available in 8 ounces with such refreshing scents as the woods, tea tree, lavender, the fields, bourbon, lime, the pines, and Arctic. You will absolutely love this soap. Please also check out their gear for sale. All the products are reasonably priced. Being veteran-founded, the company understands the dedication and sacrifice that each family makes to serve their country. A portion of sales is donated back to charities that are focused on helping veterans and our first responders. Over 1,200 bars have been sent to our deployed troops. Please check out their website, HeroSoapCompany.com, for pricing and a detailed description of all the products. When ordering, use the code RAP for a 10% discount. The company information will be listed in the podcast notes and featured on the podcast website, Facebook group page, and the podcast Instagram.